The Assyrian Empire. I'm looking on page 7 if you want to kind of mark your book as you go along here. The Assyrian Empire just gradually came to be an empire. It just gradually came into power.
Up the reaches of the Mesopotamian area, they hung more to the mountain section than they did down in the valley. But they did, if you'll look to see if it's there.
The Babylonian Empire, and at one time actually became the Fertile Crescent. Extended from the Persian Gulf over to the end of the Fertile Crescent and made virtually a duplicate of it. But as he points out here, they had their problem with the Hittites. You read in the Bible, come across the Hittites, they were just one of those many groups in Canaan when Israel came in. And maybe you were not as slow to catch on as I was. I always thought of them as rather insignificant in the group, but the Hittites at one time were a pretty powerful kingdom. They covered quite a large area and were pretty potent people to deal with. And the Assyrians found that out. The Hurrians, the Egyptians have always been a problem.
Yeah,
but the archaeologists laid that in shape. Yeah, they find them up at Byblos, they find them in the oldest city. Byblos is supposed to be the oldest city over in that country. It's up in Lebanon. That's the one I failed to check out. I was afraid somebody was going to ask that question. Take a look in the Bible Encyclopedia there in the library. You probably can find those without any problem. That's one I failed to check out. They don't show up on the historical scene very much. This is about the only time I think you'll find them mentioned. They were just one of the groups that Assyria had to deal with to finally prove themselves to be strong enough to hold an empire. Tiglath-Pileser was the fellow who really finally brought Assyria into a solid position as an empire. About 1100 B.C. Now remember what's going on in the rest of the world at this time. Remember, Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire. All right, Nineveh was here at the time that Israel was over there, because Jonah, the prophet of Israel, was sent to Nineveh. So you're getting things are going over here now, same time the Assyrian Empire was gone. And the Egyptians are already going over here. So this is not the first people to show up on the scene, but they're one of the first really strong empires to develop in the Mesopotamian area. The Sumerians and the Akkadians had their own little areas down here, but as far as an empire, some of the Assyrians are really the first to produce an empire as such in the Mesopotamian area. Take a look at this new Babylonian Empire. They tried several times to kick the Syrians in the path to get rid of them. But the thing that finally did it was a coalition. The Babylonians, the Scythians, the Medes, in 612 B.C. took Nineveh. Now, 612 B.C., you're getting on up beyond David and Solomon's time.
the needs over here, the Indians are in, they should be in this market. There was a coalition of this general area from some of the edge of the mountain range down to the Persian Gulf. They got enough of these people together to take minerals. And if you're interested in reading, going into detailed study of that situation, you'll find there's some kinfolks involved in this thing. Kind of a brother-in-law situation, as I recall, down here. I believe, don't make this a positive note, but I think in my ramifications through the pages of history that indeed one of these Babylonian fellows married a daughter of ruler up here in Canada, and then finally got across his daddy-in-law. That seems to be a little, there was a lot of treachery went on in those efforts to hold that area. But the thing that really did it was the coalition. They finally took Nineveh with this coalition, and the Babylonians then, or the Chaldeans. Who were the Chaldeans? They were a people that were confined to the Persian Gulf area, largely, and they are pretty well synonymous with the Babylonians, once the Babylonian Empire came into being. They're one and the same people. You find them used a lot of times. We talk about Chaldeans, sometimes Babylonians, sometimes the Babylonians, sometimes the Chaldeans. But the Chaldeans were the people that were down in the lower reaches of the Mesopotamian area, down near the Gulf. Babylonia was the empire that was built, and Babylon was the city. It was the capital of the Babylonians. Is that in shape up? Maybe to illustrate Israel, we'll take for example. The Jews are the people that make up the nation of Israel. The Israel is the nation. He's sometimes referred to nationally as the Israelis, but racially, he is a Jew. The Jews make up the land of Israel. The capital is Jerusalem. Israel says, everybody else says, won't recognize it, but this is the same picture here. The Chaldeans were the people. The lower reaches of the Mesopotamian area, down around the Persian Gulf area, on up above Ur and Babylon. Was the empire. Babylon was the city that was the capital. It took the empire took its name from the capital. It didn't work out that way with Assyria. Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire, but they didn't call it the Ninevean Empire. It just happened in this case that they did. They controlled Mesopotamia, as well as Syria, Phoenicia, and Palestine. That gives them the Fertile Crescent. From the Persian Gulf, up here, Syria, and Phoenicia, and Palestine. The Fertile Crescent. Neo-Babylonian Empire. They fell to the Medo-Persian Empire, of course, 539.
coalition conquered Syria. Syria had taken Israel captive.
Yeah, northern Israel.
Israel, right.
And Babylonian rulers came on with a little more devastating move. They came in, they hit Tyre and destroyed it. Tyre wasn't going to get in. They were used their batting ram, they destroyed the city. And they absorbed northern Israel and came on down and took Judah, which had not been taken by the Assyrians. And Pharaoh took all the palaces, whereas Assyria had stopped and had
reached. I'm asking, I know that the nations have been dispersed among other nations by the state of Assyria. Did they take those kind of Israelites from Babylon?
Babylon
was from Assyria, when they conquered Assyria.
Yeah, they took they kept the ones that Assyria had brought in, and then they brought those from Judah and Benjamin over in here. Shushan the palace would be here. Some of them were in this here. Some of them were down here in Babylon, and some of them referred to apparently the ones that came from Assyria and up the Mesopotamian area, so that they all were in this Mesopotamian area. And most of them were largely in the lower regions.
So they went to return on the Cyrus.
The whole 12 tribes were involved. The ones that Assyria had taken, as well as the ones that Babylon had taken. The ones that remained under the Assyrian Empire had become half-breeds. They were Samaritans. But apparently, the ones they brought into captivity didn't come to that faith. The Assyrian king figured if he had them over here, there was no problem. But he was going to make sure that those he left didn't. So the ones that came back followed the Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah back. They had to come up this area, and apparently they put out the call. All who want to go back from anywhere in this area had the opportunity, so they had to come up to that appointed area and back down anyhow. And there's some indication that 12 tribes are pretty well represented in the return from Babylonian captivity. They weren't lost any longer than that. Back in their war long. They were scattered, but they weren't lost. That seems to be what took place there. The Babylonian Empire, as you know, reading the Bible, was really Nebuchadnezzar's baby. His father had launched the empire, but Nebuchadnezzar was the fellow who really marched his armies over the entire fertile crescent and took it clear down to the borders of Egypt. And there's some indication that he tried Egypt, but he wasn't that successful. And the indication doesn't seem to be that he ever completely conquered Egypt and brought in as a part of the empire. But he did take down through the borders of Egypt and perhaps part of the outreaches that Egypt controls. See, Egypt maintained control of this area, the main this capital here up in the south. How far down this Nebuchadnezzar conquered? Remember when Nebuchadnezzar first conquered this area, he left a puppet king over there in Jerusalem. You can stay here and run your own system of religion as long as you don't get me in trouble. And Jeremiah kept telling them, don't, you better leave well enough alone. But this fellow didn't have sense enough to know when he's well off. So he tried to create a rebellion and get Egypt to support him. Nebuchadnezzar found out what was going on. He came over here and really wiped them out that time. Took
everything that was worth anything to him. The Babylon, and those that were left here, was what in the Second World War was called 4Fs. They flunked the test to get in the army. They couldn't make it. They were the old that were no value to him, the lower class of people that weren't educated, that had much promise to him. And that's the crowd that Jeremiah had to talk about. You talk about a congregation, a discouraged congregation. No wonder he wrote Lamentation. They'd whine and they'd cry around the house. This young prophet, Hananiah took advantage of that situation. He's one of these young preachers that comes along and he's going to give the people a positive approach, you know. And Jeremiah was going around wearing this wooden yoke as a symbol of their captivity to remind the people that God had judged Israel for their sins, and their brethren were in Babylonian captivity, Babylonian bondage, because of their sins. And so Hananiah comes along and he says, hey, that old backwoods, he's past his day. He's had it. I'm the fellow that's going to really show you the way out of this thing. You follow me, in 2 years we'll have these vessels that goes out of Babylon back in the temple, and we'll really have it going. You just follow me. Very humble. And so Jeremiah said, well, that's fine, young man. That's fine. I couldn't wish that any more. You couldn't wish that any more than I do. I'd be glad to see it. But he said, when it happens, it'll be soon enough for us to decide whether you're right or not. In the meantime, let's believe what God has said about it, what the other prophets have said about it. And so after that gathering, God came to Hananiah and said, and in fact, the business Hananiah got real demonstrative about the thing. He took this wooden yoke off of old Hananiah's neck and broke it in two, and he said, quit wearing that thing. You give these people a bad attitude. Don't do that. And so God told Jeremiah, he said, look, I'm going to put an iron yoke around your neck this time. You won't break that easy. And you go back and tell that young buck, you understand I'm using paraphrase. If you go tell that young buck, I'm going to kill him before this year is over. I'm going to kill him this year. And he lasted about 6 months. And God wiped him out. And went ahead and did what he been telling Big Jeremiah going to do all the time. Now you meet folks once in a while, God's plan just isn't quite fast enough for them. David got in trouble that way, you remember? He wanted to get the ark up to Jerusalem in a hurry, so instead of carrying it like it had been made to carry by the two covered poles being run through the rings on the side of it, they built a cart, put it on the cart, and everyone jogging up to Jerusalem in a hurry. And the wheel of that cart bumped a rock, and that thing like fell off, and some fellow reached out to grab it, and you were never supposed to use that thing, and God killed him on the spot. He had to take time out there and make everything right, and they lost more time over that cart that bumped the rock than they would have ever lost carrying like she ever started. We get impatient. That has been my problem. Still, I have a problem with it. That one thing that has to take care of is old age. But, man is impatient. God tells us what he's going to do. We get the idea that God maybe forgot about it, or we need to help him. Push this thing along a little faster. You've got time. When the Egyptians came down to the Red Sea, And they were just prancing up and down. They couldn't wait. Here came the Egyptian army behind, the wilderness on one side, the mountains on the other. Well, Moses, you see it's an impossible situation. You've got it down here in this thing. Moses said, stand still. See the salvation of the Lord. Stand still. Quit being so impatient about the thing. Have a nervous bust down the ground. Amos and Andy used to say, and they were so right. I'll tell you, it's not a nervous breakdown. It's just a plain nervous bust down. The few times we have, we bring one ourselves. Can't wait on God to take care of them. So, how do we get into that? Can't keep from preaching a little when you get into this history. But Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, cleaned out Israel real good after this young puppet king you have over there tried to form a coalition with Egypt and create a rebellion. Took them all time. We've discussed Hammurabi already. These empires we're covering now are the ones that Daniel prophesied about. The Persian Empire came along, of course, behind the... Remember what we're doing, we're studying the sweeps of empires across the Mesopotamian area. We're in specific geographic areas here. So these empires arise and sweep westward. And the Persians next come along. And they take Babylon. You're familiar with what happened there in the fifth chapter of Daniel. Under the Persians, whose capitals were located in the Iranian highlands, the Persians didn't take too much to putting their capital down here in Babylon. But the Iran is back here. See, we're looking at this, we're studying this area right in here. This is Iraq. Iraq takes in the Mesopotamian area. Iran, the Iranian highlands, seem to be with the Persians. Of course, this is Persia. They seem to keep their capital back in the highlands here rather than down here in the river basin. Incidentally, those of you who were at church last night, where I was, you remember I talked about Russia getting a base here at South Yemen and then across here in Ethiopia so that they could control the entrance into the Red Sea. Did you watch the news last night? Their ships and Iraqi ships with Russian permission are swarming through that thing now, feeding material right up into the Jordanian base here. So that through Jordan can be fed into Iraq. But why would the Russians do that? They want Persians. Well, if they can create the downfall of Iran through their supply and encouragement of Iraq, then Iraq is not going to create too much of a problem. Russia says, okay, you can have what you want down here, these little islands. There you said that it was taken away from you, and we'll go in there and clean up this mess. That little bear in there.
So it's not just
the
Jordan's flag.
No, the news last night said that the ships were actually, they showed photos of them. They were swarmed by them. And they showed them farther up, and there was no way to get in to come through the Russian controlled entrance. And the difference in the port of Aqaba, the Gulf of Aqaba, or the port of Aqaba, and the port of Eilat, is that Aqaba is on the Jordanian side of this thing, and Eilat is right across the Israeli side. So the same end, two ends of this
three joints.
Yes. And Israel on the other side is watching that action very well. They can sit in their court a lot and watch him come in. And they're watching very worthy, and with good reason.
And of course. In fact, Mr. Biggin said yesterday, Hussein's an older boy. He ought to be careful. He ought not do that.
In 612 B.C., we've talked about the destruction of Nineveh. I'm looking at the Persian Empire up there, top right-hand column, page 7. And the Persian, whose great capital located in the Arena Highlands, the great cities of Mesopotamia lost much of their former glory. Up until this time, Mesopotamia, the great cities down here, have been the center. That's where the glory of Babylon has been, the glory of Nineveh. But when the Persians took it over, they didn't go for this area much. Their home country had been back here in the mountain area. And they didn't go much for this area. They hung back here. And so the glory of lower Mesopotamia, or Mesopotamia period, the major cities had been down there, faded out of the picture. Nineveh had been destroyed in 612 B.C., and Babylon was destroyed by Xerxes early in the 5th century in the interest of Alexander the Great in rebuilding Babylon. Never came to fruition. Alexander the Great, of course, conquered this whole area clear down to India, and then he came back to Babylon, and really what it boils down to with all the diplomatic names you drink and stuff. Alexander the Great had dreams of rebuilding this big city of Babylon. He was in the city of Babylon. In fact, he was in the, he drank himself to death at the very palace where Belshazzar was taken by the Medes and Persians when Babylon fell. And he had dreams of rebuilding that city, but too much booze for a young man with too much success, and he just didn't live long enough to do it. Yeah, now that kind of got in his way too. That got in his way too, because God already said, nope, down she goes and down she stays. So that didn't work out. Well, what about Alexander's kingdom? Of course, here's where things change, is that I want you to see. So far, these empires have been originating down here, moving in this direction. The wind current, trade routes have been going this way. Sumerians, the Akkadians, didn't move too much, they stayed in this area of development. Then the Assyrians, then the Babylonians came up, and the Medes and Persians came up. But now, when the Medes and the Persian Empire, with its ambition to keep going west, they ran into the fog down here in what we call Greece now, Macedonia. Philip of Macedon was ruler of that area. And they bogged down there. And so in order to get that, they had him assassinated. Philip of Macedon was assassinated. And his son Alexander, young fellow, but that made him mad. They killed his dad and he didn't like it. And he picked up his sword and he started cutting right and left, and he just kept coming. And now, notice what happened. The conquest start moving east, from west to east. The Grecians under Alexander moved here and bringing his culture with him. The Romans came this way from Rome, bringing their know-how of road building and construction with them, but not much schooling as far as book learning was concerned. But the traffic changes once you pass the Persian period. That's coming back the other way. And that changes the whole concept of civilization. with the Greek Empire coming back, the culture and educational system of the Grecians began to saturate this area. And then it stayed there, even when the Romans took this, the literary training and the culture of the Grecians still held very strong in this area. And the Romans just added what they had to offer to it. And that's the picture into which the Lord came. With the greatest empire the world had seen, Rome, controlling the world, and with roads open for Christianity and traffic by sea, but Christianity was spread far and wide. They didn't have roads apart in this time. But now it's all clear. The Lord gave His commission. The roads were there. The language was there. And so, God, that's a pretty good idea what He's doing, you know. All the way through. But the Persian Empire was the last one to begin to move from east to west. Now, what happened to Alexander's empire? He built a great empire. He was a great military man, and he was sharp enough to bring his culture and his Grecian, in other words, the term that he used is Hellenization. He Hellenized the countries that he took. And under Alexander, notice what happened here to this Babylonian empire. They fell under Alexander, and the empire was Alexander's after the Battle of Arbela, 331 B.C. We keep edging closer and closer here to the appearance of Christ on earth, but keep in mind that we're not discussing what's going on over here and here. And we're discussing what's happening in this area up to this time. We don't pick up what happened here. We're geographically discussing a particular geographic area. The conqueror didn't live long enough to realize, establish his power in the Near East effectively. And so when he died, his generals got in the big ruckus over who was going to have what, taking the spoils of war. He didn't last long enough to prevent that. And Seleucus managed to take Mesopotamia with most of the rest of the Persian Empire. Seleucus is a man named, he was referred to as Seleucus, got the Babylonian area and the Persian area down, along with this whole thing back up here. But he wasn't quite man enough to hold it. His successors were ineffective in maintaining the empire. The Parthians, which were pretty closely associated with the Medes, gained control of Mesopotamia in the middle of the 3rd century and held it until Rome won Mesopotamia. So while the Seleucids had this area started, the successors of the old general just weren't able to hang on to it, and it got away from them. And it really remained kind of a forgotten land. Not a great deal of activity in here until the Romans finally came in and took this area again. And the Romans controlled it. And the control began to come from the west. Okay, do I have you pretty well confused now about these empires and their origin and effect on the Mesopotamian area?
Hammurabi didn't have the people with the attack,
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just kind of, I can picture of when, would there be a contemporary of this, a Bible contemporary?
Of Hammurabi? 1728 would be about, Israel would still, the Jews would still be in Egypt. About this time, not too far from the time they were leaving there, the time that they leave Egypt. I'm thinking in reverse now, because the saying the date of Adam up to the flood, and then from there on, working back, B.C.
About
1900, yeah, that's usually around the figure of 2000, but that's a little wide. Solomon was king of Israel around 1000 B.C. So, and they were, Israel was in Egypt 400 years. And so I expect that around, probably around Jacob's time or a little after, probably during the time that Israel was, the Jews were in. The contemporary time would probably be pretty close to the period when the Egyptians ran the Hyksos king down and took over Lower Egypt again. And Israel became slaves somewhere around that period. That's rough, but that would probably be a generalized of the period. I'd have to check. I think Egyptian history would be the closest contemporary identification of the time. I'd have to check the dates and
just to be. Well, that gives me an idea. I like to think about that a lot.
He was probably contemporary with those some of those highly skilled and cultured Egyptians, and there is some decent exchange we find very shortly here. In fact, we're going to skip a long period here. There's one thing I want you to take a look at on page 9, this left-hand column about halfway down. They are using the carbon-14 method of dating organic materials. And they come up with a period that this fellow Jarmo settlement dates the period of the 6500 B.C. And you're off your coconut tree. This won't work. And this carbon-14 method has been proven not to be reliable. So, I don't know, do they still have that in? I don't think they intended to revise this book and to update it. And they said that they got to, when I contacted them to see if we're going to be able to get the text the next year, they said, well, there's such urgent demand to get it back in print that they just went ahead and reprinted it instead of revising that data. And I don't know whether they would take that out or not, but that certainly is an outdated method and a fallible date. I just want to criticize them.
Even places are
how many of these people in this area were related to the Iranians? It seems that Persia was a distinct people from the Medes and these people in here. But, and they eventually came to, it was a Persian empire rather than a Medo-Persian empire. And to this good day, they are kind of proud of their distinction from the rest of this area in here. Now they're part of this area in here. The Medes, the Persians, pretty well are people of their own. They're not a part of this area. They just came here until they conquered it. Well, maybe Assyria is from Persia. A lot of these fellows that write with much authority on who Sol is and what he is, because Assyria sounds like Asher, and because Gomer sounds like Germany, and on down the line goes, some of these fellows, and Ammon sounds like Ammon, they say that's where these came from. Well, probably so. And I find that in a lot of cases they haven't proven it conclusively. But there's some pretty strong indication by the similarity in names and the historical background.
The Assyrians?
I don't know whether that has any connection with them or not. I just fouled out on that one. Probably the names are very similar. And that usually, the name is usually a pretty safe guide, because the language was divided, and once the language was divided, these people had their peculiarities of language. But I'm going to pick up next on page 13. A lot of material in there. If you want to read, fine, it's good, but I'm going to hold you accountable for the areas I'm calling your attention to. And look at the Sumerian city-state. A little different. We back up again. To the Sumerian time, so don't get confused. We covered the empire aspect of the Mesopotamian area that we've been looking at. Now we come back and look at some of the civilization of those people. The Sumers, or the Sumerians, their system of wedge shaped, I'm looking at top left-hand column on page 13, of wedge-shaped characters inscribed on clay tablets constitutes man's earliest written record. Now that was until they discovered Ebla again. And this city of Ebla is upsetting a lot of history and archaeological discoveries because of its ancient dating and the complete records they found there. But this system of lettering was the type lettering that the Babylonians used. They carried over into Babylon this Sumerian wedge-shaped letters. If you look at figure 9 on page 12, you see the clay tablets and them doing the wedge-shaped letters on the clay tablets. It takes a long time to find a new place like Ebla to learn how to read that particular language or dialect. And they're still working on this. They found it's the first time that they've ever found a huge library intact. Whoever conquered that city just didn't bother to tear up everything. They got into the library, and I think there's thousands of these clay tablets, hundreds of stacks of library. And they want to be sure that they have learned how to read that language properly before they begin committing themselves on a lot of things. You can do a lot of guesswork, speculation, but that's not
history, and so we're a little careful about it. But this is where the wedge-shaped characters originated and carries them to the Fertile Crescent. If you'll notice, it's a sign language. Hebrew is a sign language. That's why it's so much more difficult for most of us than Greek, because the characters are entirely different. It's a sign language, and Greek is not. And that didn't seem to nice the bell. And so this is a sign language. This whole civilization down here, where did the Hebrew language come from? Abraham came from Ur down here, up to Haran, and then back down here. And the Hebrew language was not the thing that sourced from the Canaanites. They were very careful to keep their own culture and to marry into their own family background. And when the Jews came back to this country and began to settle their own the land again, there were two things that the leader that conceived the new state of Israel said, we've got to do one, we must get back to the land. You're going to rebuild a nation, you must get back to the land. Second, you must get back to the language. That's the original language of the Hebrew. So you're still studying a thing that really originated down here. And that's the same here. Changed its form. Yiddish came to be a common language that Jews used in the interim period, but they've come back now to original Hebrew, not the Yiddish. A Jewish friend of mine that went to Israel.